Good morning. On behalf of Women's and Men's Ministry of the Fallbrook SDA Church, I would like to welcome each one of you to today's health presentation on the Gerson Method. Maybe for some of you, this is the first time you hear about this method. For others, you might have already read and informed yourselves about it in the past. Before I invite Talisha to introduce our guest speaker and other invitees, I want to share a few thoughts to frame this morning's health presentation. Health is something important for all of us, yes? All right. Most of us don't really think about it until we or someone we love visits their doctor and they are told that more tests need to be done. And they are quickly referred to a specialist. The news can be devastating. Life can take a twist. And all of a sudden, we face a myriad of questions. Naturally, we desire to find the best options available to treat our disease and restore our body back to health. It is clear to most of us today that there are a number of available resources and options that in some cases are inexpensive, simple, natural options that not only help treat certain diseases, but in many cases prevents them from happening. These are in many cases available, like just simply taking a brisk walk at the ocean or by the ocean, having a balanced diet, and getting proper rest. When we talk about a healthy lifestyle, we speak about all aspects of health, including physical, mental, and spiritual health. The Holy Scriptures is clear to tell us that we are wonderfully made. And because our Maker is interested in every aspect of our life, I would like to tell you that the one who made us all has not forgotten any of us. In fact, the Bible tells us that his thoughts regarding each one of us cannot be numbered. Psalm 139, verse 14, 17, and 18 expresses this thought nicely. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would outnumber the sand. When I awake, I am still with you. The one who made us all is the one who also thinks about each one of us constantly. If we suffer, he suffers. If we rejoice, he rejoices with us. He can't stop thinking about his wonderful and masterful work of creation, which in his words was very good. The biblical message is clear. He loves us. And he wants the best for each one of us. Today, we will hear about a method for treating disease. As a church, we do not endorse or practice this or any other specific method. But we recognize that the Gerson method has some valuable health remedies that are in harmony with health principles that we practice. Each person needs to make their own decision as to how to treat diseases. We hope that these health principles and remedies will be beneficial to all those who have come here today. At this moment, I would like to invite Talisha Cook to introduce our guest speaker and other invitees that have come to be with us today.
Good morning, everyone. Dr. Donato if you don't know this already, is a certified Gerson practitioner and clinical consultant. And he is in full-time practice with clients in 50 countries. And he's here for you this morning. He is also the head clinical instructor at the Gerson Institute in San Diego. He primarily sees advanced oncology cases in the Gerson therapy, which is renowned for cancer therapy. But he also sees many chronic degenerative diseases as well. I am honored to present him to you this morning. I've known him for several years. And so, with no further ado, Dr. Donato.
Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay, very good. I have to say that I didn't even know this church was so health conscious until I came here. You have a very health conscious church, and I'm excited. I mean, every church should be like this, and to teach health, and because that's part of what we are. When we're made in the image of God, you know, we have a physical body and a spiritual aspect as well, with a good mental and emotional connection. So I just have to thank the pastor and the church in Talicia for inviting me to present something that I've been totally excited about for the past 4 years, but it didn't come across to me that I would, at least, I wasn't prepared to speak in a church, at least in a Seventh-day Adventist church, because things were still developing over time, and I didn't fully understand it until I saw the connection. It was probably a year ago, and I just said, you know, Lord, if it's time for me to speak, if you want me to share this, I'll be happy to. And it seems like Talicia was probably the one person that finally made me realize that it's probably time. So I'm just excited because I've been seeing things in 4 years I have never seen before in the 25 years that I've been a healthcare provider. Never seen it before. And it will probably never be published. So it is on a grassroots level. You know, what you see is what you get, and what you do about it is it will come out, and only the truth is only on you, and not going to be, it's not going to be in the published arena, because it's very difficult to get things published. It costs a lot. So I want to first establish the platform, so to start this, because it's very important to understand that I believe that it's not all physical. If you think that's the way it is, then you haven't gotten the picture. Because when I work with clients around the world, and they have very serious advanced cancer, and they just want to fix something by doing something, and I see why a few months later they're not getting better, then I start to wonder, you know, how come? How come one person is getting better and another doesn't? And it's the same disease. It's the same stage of the cancer. And so to establish that, you have to realize that if you have a mentality of being if you don't believe in something, you will not get well. People who do the Gerson therapy, they believe. You have to be convicted that it's the right thing to do. And not only that, you have to be convicted and converted in that direction. And the conversion process is something that comes from within. Nobody can do that to you. I can't convince you. You have to be convinced even before you come to me or to any practitioner. So that's what I'm seeing more and more. Success is from within, whatever God has put in your heart. That's why it's partly spiritual and then mental and physical. And that's when something can happen. So as the pastor had read Psalms 139, 14, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. It is amazing what I've seen in the past 4 years. I cannot count. I have seen probably 650 cases in about close to 4 years. My first year, I saw three major cases. That was part of my training. And then as a certified practitioner, once I was put into their system, into the Gerson system, I was immediately called from all over the world. So I eventually had to close my practice down because I was working as a physical therapist, chiropractor, a lifestyle educator. And so at that point, I realized I could not keep up with that. And there was very few people that are certified in the world, so I decided I'm going to just close my practice doing traditional alternative therapies, and that's just do consulting through a telemedicine format, and that is a video consulting online, and it can be accessed around the world. This is a very inspiring view. I like hiking. I like mountain climbing. I have climbed Mount Whitney 8 times since 2004. I changed my lifestyle, which is fundamental. You have to have a good lifestyle to make things work. And since that time, I climbed Mount Whitney 8 times. And at this point, I think I have enough climbing there because it's a tough climb. But it is very, very rewarding in terms of your how you feel about your health and your physical abilities to climb that mountain. Genesis 1:26 and 27, it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and every creeping thing that crept upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And the Lord formed man of the dust of the ground, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Then the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath or spirit of life, and man became a living being. That's in the Amplified Bible. You know the chemical makeup of the human body? It's 64% water, 20% protein, 10% fat, 1% carbohydrate, 5% minerals, and after cremation, it's about 4 to 6 pounds, depending on whether you're male or female. That's all you weigh, about 4 to 6 pounds after cremation, the dry weight. This is very interesting. As I was thinking about it, a living being. You have the dust of the ground, and then you add that with the breath of life, and all of a sudden, you have something alive. You know, I was an anatomy teaching assistant, and we did a lot of studies, dissections on cadavers, and I can't help it, but sometimes I would look at the person and it's not a person. It's actually just a cadaver. A person is an entity that has something else on top of just something lifeless. And so I have a profound respect to the human body. So that dust, God formed a person that looks like a person of the dust. And then what happened? He breathed into the nostrils the breath of life, and the person suddenly becomes alive. If you ever are in a winter time and you're breathing outside, you can see that breath, you know, the vapor coming out of your mouth. And a lifeless person doesn't have that. And so you think, wow, you know, that entity is something. There's something there that keeps a person alive, that breath. And I want you to hold on to that thought, because that's going to be an important topic afterwards. And I think the print might be small, but let's hope we can take care of this. Genesis 1:29 was the basically our fundamental directive as how the human body is supposed to live and survive. It says, "And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of the tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat." So that's our original diet in the Garden of Eden. You know what's interesting? What about the animals? What do you think their original diet was intended to be? Genesis 1:30, it says, "And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to every living thing, to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb to meat, and for meat, and it was so." That's amazing. So in the Garden of Eden, everything was originally designed to for food is vegetables, fruits. There was no predators and no prey. That was the original design. You know, it's a very complex process as far as what happens when you eat something. So I'm just going to show you a biochemistry slide, and I'm just going to see if I can just briefly cover it, because afterwards I'll expand on it. I don't know if any of you have been, if you remember the chemistry, and I had to review it because it's not something I look at all the time, you know. So it's a very complex situation. But when you're eating food, what food do you think will give you the energy of the three macromolecules? Protein, carbohydrates, or fat? Which one will give you energy? How many say, raise your hand, carbohydrates? Protein? Okay. And fats? Okay. Well, what's interesting is it is the carbohydrates. Okay. Carbohydrate is the only one that gives you energy. It's where it's broken down to the very basic. And I'm going to see if I can activate my pointer here. Okay, so I'm going to show you. Okay. Can you see this pointer? Okay. That's glucose. Okay, glucose comes from carbohydrates. Right, so glucose is broken down to pyruvate. Now, this is inside a cell. Okay? And a pyruvate is a smaller molecule. I don't know what happened to my... Okay, let's try again. So pyruvate... Okay, so pyruvate is broken down, and in order to go into this special cell that makes energy... before I go there, I'm going to just back up a little bit here. So pyruvate, to go from glucose to pyruvate, energy is produced. And that's what you see on the right here with the NAD and an NADH. And that's going to yield normally three energy packages called ATPs. Okay? And then another thing here that happens is when the small pyruvate goes into this mitochondria, it is converted into acetyl-CoA. And to do that, you will lose some energy, and so the net gain then will be for each NADH, it will be a total of 2 ATPs of energy. Okay, 2. Keep that in mind. Now, as a result, the conversion, so the energy goes in here now, the acetyl-CoA, it's a break it down, and then it has to go through a series of what they call the Krebs cycle, where a lot of energy is being produced in the form of ATP, and the total yield of the ATP net gain is 38. And so energy is produced outside the cell, and energy is produced inside this special organ called organelle called mitochondria. So the difference here is that in this area here, it does not require oxygen. It only requires it's an anaerobic glycolysis. That's what it is. So no oxygen is required. And so when you do a sprint, like a 100-meter dash, you're relying on this step right here from glucose to pyruvate, and then it's converted to lactic acid. It builds up in your system, and if you do that for too long, it will start to cramp your muscle, and then you pretty much are unable to function that muscle, which is usually happens in marathon runners around the 18th mile. That's where it hit me. So they call that you hit the wall. But the lactic, it could not be converted back in the liver to go back in the same cycle, because you need to take time to recover. But what's interesting here is that all this whole step right here requires a very important ingredient, which I'll tell you in a second. But this is real chemistry facts. It's glucose that will give you the energy, not protein. Protein can be converted by a longer route to give you a form of energy, but at the same time, it's very energy depleting to produce that, to get that. It's only for emergencies, and that's what happens when someone with cancer, they start to lose a lot of weight and muscles and their skin and bones. It's because of this situation. So this special organ is incredible. We have numerous, you can't even count, is this probably thousands and millions of it. But anyway, it's found in every cell, but the most active organ in the body has the most mitochondria. So it requires a lot of energy. So which organ of the body do you think is the one that contains the most mitochondria? Exactly, the heart. The heart, tremendous energy needed. Those heart muscle cells are so active, and so you have to have lots of these energy packets. And so, you know, when somebody has a heart attack, what happens? Something happened to this. There's an interference. And so you're going to learn that in a second here, what that ingredient is, that powerful ingredient, that spark of life that made the difference between the dust and the living being. What was that? What was that? The breath of life. What is that breath? Oxygen. Wow. Somebody's actually thinking. That's great. Oxygen is key to life. Now, it's very interesting that oxygen is, it's supposed to be 21% in the atmosphere, and that's how much we're supposed to be. That's basically the textbook information. But, you know, today, do you think we bring the same amount of oxygen as it was in the Garden of Eden? Probably not. Do you think if you live in, say, San Diego or Los Angeles, do you think there's a lot of oxygen in that city? It's probably mixed with a lot of hydrocarbons, don't you think, from the pollution? So when you breathe the air, you're not really breathing a whole lot of oxygen. So this is a very important ingredient because the air, the oxygen that we breathe is going to be key into that biochemistry model I showed you. What makes glucose into pyruvate into the Krebs cycle? It's extremely important. Sorry about that. If you're seeing any messages from my Verizon. Okay, so can you see that? It's very hard to. So this one here is interesting because this is a photomicrograph of a heart muscle. Heart muscle with these cells, and the heart muscle cell with the nucleus in there. But this is interesting. When I looked at the heart muscle cell, it's wow, you know, all these things are lit up. Here's another one of the nerve cell. You know, there's the brain is the second most active to the heart in terms of the numbers of mitochondria. It's incredible. All this activity going all over requiring so much energy. You will start to remember this. You will start to understand that energy is this is the key to health. If you don't have energy, you are not going to be healthy no matter what, because it's about that how that glucose is converted into energy. It's so important. You know, we have 170 to 100 trillion cells in the body, and each of that cell is just like you right now. You're just a large picture of each cell. Each cell has to breathe air. Each cell has to take in nutrients and to take out trash. Each cell has to manufacture its own things. A lot of it is produced in different. It's the same thing, but for every cell, they're like mirror effect, and they communicate with each other. But one thing they need, extremely, very important, they need access to this. Can you see this? Okay, what do you think are you looking at? Your red blood cell, this biconcave disc. Okay, your cells need access to this. What are they carrying? Oxygen. Wow. You know, as you've seen in the picture about God forming the man out of the dust, and he breathed into it the breath of life, that's the very first introduction of oxygen, and a person becomes pink and nice and alive. Okay, and when you see a person leave this world, they don't look pink and alive, and it looks completely different. And that oxygen is key. And we don't have enough of that anymore. What will it be like 10 years from now? You can truly appreciate fresh air and invigorating life when you climb mountains. You know, I said Mount Whitney is the second tallest mountain in the 48 lower 48 states. The only one taller is the one in Alaska. And that's Mount McKinley or Denali, and that's over 20,000 feet. So when I climbed Mount Whitney at 14,500 feet, after 10,000 feet, I started to walk like I was 100 years old. So I realized how important oxygen is to me. And you know what's interesting? Is someone passed me at 12,000 feet. And he was a good 20 years older than me. He had a lot of white hair, and he was an elderly gentleman. And he passed me at 12,000 feet. And I looked at him because, you know, just a few of us, we all spread out when we were going together as to start at the 8,300 feet entry point or the base. And then at that point, you kind of separate because some of you might be a lot more, very much better endurance, and some don't. So you just have to spread out eventually. And so I was by myself, and someone passed me at 12,000 feet, and I asked him, sir, how many times have you been to this climb? He said, oh, this is my third time. And he said, what about you, young man? And I said, I've been here about 7 times. He said, well, keep up the good work. And he went on. And I thought, I want to be like him. How did he do it? How did he do it? How come he's doing this so well? Everyone is going to be different. You don't compare yourself. God has blessed you with a gift, and we're all different. And that's what's beautiful about it. But I truly admire him. I said, I want to have that kind of energy when I'm at that age, which is not very far. Actually, I'll date myself. I don't mind. I celebrated my birthday over a week ago, and I've just turned 52. God is good. There's nothing like hiking at mountain peaks and looking down at what God has made. This is life. It's so wonderful to be out there. There's nothing like it. Nothing like in the big cities. That's what vibrant life is. And so I ran the Portland Marathon a few years ago, and I wanted to experience a balance of physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And this gave me a glimpse of what it's like to have vibrant life. Vibrant life means there's an energy component into it. So God's plan is for us to be in health. 3 John 2, beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth. You know, before I start the next topic, I want you to know that I truly feel that I'm in a position where I have never thought I would be, and only God brought me in this situation. Because back in 2003, as I was in practice doing physical therapy and chiropractic, I asked God, is this what you want me to do, or is there something more that you want me to do? And I never knew where it would lead me to be where I'm at. And as head clinical instructor of the residency in the Gerson Institute, teaching physicians from all over the world, I thought, Lord, this is amazing. What is going to happen? Because it is incredible as more and more physicians are looking into other options to help their cases, to go to the root cause of disease and try to turn that around, not just to address symptoms. It is totally amazing. I'm just mind-boggled by it. So so this is the end of the Fearfully and Wonderfully Made. And so before I continue, I just want to honor God by asking you to join me in just a brief prayer of thanks. Father God, we thank you so much, Lord, for what you've done to make us to be a living being, and for giving us the breath of life. And we honor you today for that blessing and for the opportunity to learn how to reverse disease. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, just take about a minute here so I can pull up my other slide. Sometime today, I want you to write some things down if you have questions, because I will take it at the end. If you try to answer questions like right now, it will probably slow me down, and I have to be out of here by 2:45 because I have to be at the airport. My flight leaves at 6 p.m. And San Diego airport is very busy and stressful. And so I have to be out by 2:45. So if there's any and the question and answer, let's do everything we can before that time. Okay, so we're going to enter now the Gerson therapy. How many of you have never read the book of the Gerson therapy? Can you raise your hand? Okay, there's a lot of you. Okay. Have you ever seen any video clips online in YouTube about the Gerson therapy? Okay, so there's a few. Yeah, that's good. Before coming here, have you ever, or before hearing about this talk, have you ever heard about the Gerson therapy? I mean, those of you who have never heard about the Gerson therapy before this, can you raise your hand? Okay, all right. So I'm going to give you a good idea about what this is about and how it came around. So I'm going to project it now. You know, the technology we have today is incredible. Can you hear me? You want me to speak louder?
Yes.
Turn me up, really. Okay. We have such amazing advanced technology. This church, by the way, is very technological. I'm very impressed. You need that today. So the only thing you need now is a TV station. But it is incredible what you can do. If you learn technology, you need to have an understanding. I know that, you know, some of us use technology for other reasons, but as far as what you really need to is for communication purposes around the world, if you know how to do it, you don't even have to travel anymore because you can. What I do is I talk to people in China, Taiwan, Japan, in Russia, Tahiti, the Philippines, all over the world. And they have the same internet type access with the capabilities of video conferencing. So it's really, it's less like talking from me to you, but, you know, and we can see each other with the video cams. So you don't really have to travel to see somebody anymore, just long as we have the information that I need and that what you can offer to me. And that's about it. And we can share the screen, you know, the computer. You can share your screen. I'll share my screen. It's just incredible what we can do today. So I want to make sure that you understand the Gerson therapy is not a lifestyle. Please. Please understand. The Gerson therapy is not a lifestyle. It is a therapy. Okay? And it can be used with lifestyle medicine. It can be used with even traditional medicine. So it is not a lifestyle. It's a therapy. That's the difference. And you don't stay on this forever because it is a therapy. You need to be on a lifestyle. That's your fundamental level that you need to start on. You need to change your lifestyle first and then use the Gerson therapy to reverse a condition that is chronic, any disease, with a few exceptions. Okay, so here's something else that you need to know. And I don't know what happened to my projection, but let's try again. Well, you just have to learn how to use it. Okay, so there is no lifestyle medicine that will cover the topic of reversing cancer. I want you to understand that. I have been involved with the CHIP program. And those of you who are in members of the church here, the CHIP program is something that has been taught in many churches as a lifestyle approach to helping reverse different chronic ailments. But never is discussed cancer reversal. Okay? You have to take it a notch higher if you want to reverse cancer. You cannot use just regular lifestyle medicine. The cancer is going too fast for you to stop it. It has to be at another level. And that's why when I came to understanding about lifestyle of the Gerson therapy And as it relates to lifestyle, I realize that it needs to be a platform to launch for the Gerson therapy is a lifestyle, and then you apply the Gerson therapy to reverse a chronic disease condition. Now, I have to give you a disclaimer, because I'm just about to show some photos that can be disturbing. Okay? Is there any children here? Okay. Now, it's important to understand that this is a health education workshop that is not intended to diagnose and treat diseases and cancer. The FDA has not approved this modality for the purpose of treatment of chronic disease and cancer. The principles learned from this workshop is to open your mind and think outside of the box. You are responsible for your own health, and pursuing this at home will be at your own risk. Do you understand? If you intend to try this at home, please seek the guidance of a qualified healthcare provider or your medical doctor. I have to say that because we are in a country where there are laws, and you need to understand that you cannot quote me on this. Okay? You have to read up on yourself. Like I said, it is at a grassroots level. You have to study on your own to apply it. Everyone is afraid when they hear the big C pronounced upon them. These are clients that I've seen personally in my office. They came from all over. It's very disturbing. The picture on the left is, thank you. The picture on the left that you see is sarcoma. Thank you. A 15-year-old girl from Germany. She looks pregnant, but it's not pregnancy. At first, the doctors thought she was pregnant because, 15-year-old coming to a clinic, having a bulging tummy. It's got to be something like that. But they did the imaging study, and lo and behold, they found that it is full of cancer, and it's called a sarcoma of the abdominal muscle. Oh, and when you feel it, it's hard. It's not soft. And then she had one that's coming off the side. And the other gentleman here has a stage 4 melanoma, and it's on the neck. And the surgery is completely disfiguring. If you had surgery, it's a radical. What choice do you have when you see these things? The next picture is a little bit more disturbing. Cancer is not a pretty picture. It is hideous. But there's something about cancer. It is a very intelligent system. It knows very well about the Krebs cycle. It knows exactly what it has to do to survive. And we can keep chasing shadows forever and never get to stop it. And it took a genius to recognize that. It's incredibly intelligent, and it always wants to come back. According to the American Cancer Society, the lifetime probability of developing any cancer in men is 1 in 2. In your lifetime, men, 1 in 2 of you will have cancer. And 1 in 7 of those people will have prostate cancer. So it's very popular, it seems, in men to have prostate cancer, usually after the age of 50. For women, 1 in 3 will develop any cancer in their lifetime, and 1 in 8 will be breast. So prostate and breast, very commonly seen in the practice. It's incredibly high. That picture that you see on the right is breast cancer. It's taken the whole breast, and it's coming out, bleeding. So you can imagine the person's hemoglobin is low. Another one you'll see from a person in another country. Fortunately, I don't want to show pictures if there are any faces. That's breast cancer that's about to pop from a person with breast cancer. The top 10 cancer cases in the world in 2012, published by the Cancer Research Fund, lung cancer is number one. Breast cancer, this is all in order. Colorectal, you have prostate, stomach, liver, you have cervical or uterine, esophagus, bladder cancer. You know what's interesting? I've seen them all in just 3 years. Incredible. It's just about everybody that I see is now is cancer. And at first I was intimidated because I didn't understand how someone can handle this. And can we really stop it? Is it possible? As I mentioned to you, this is taken from the National Cancer Institute, that men, the risk is 1 in 2. The lifetime probability for women, it's 1 in 3. And what's interesting here is they did a 5-year trends of cancer survival once you have cancer. In 2000, it's 68% survival rate in 5 years after you're diagnosed with it. And of course, it's better than the 70s, that 49%, because, you know, we have all kinds of life prolonging medicines out there. And so it looks better, but also they're detecting cancer earlier. And so, you know, the time they detect it to the time a person dies generally then becomes the time 5 years from the time it was detected looks better because it's discovered earlier. But it, nevertheless, it's still the same. The person will, in that 5 years, is the same. Cancer hasn't really changed. It's just that they're detecting it earlier. So it appears that you're living longer because they're just going backwards. So it hasn't really changed. And the estimated causes for cases for childhood and adolescent cancers in 2014, from 0 to 14 years, 29% of this is a leukemia type, an acute lymphocytic leukemia. And adolescents from 15 to 19 years, it's Hodgkin's lymphoma. So the lymphomas, leukemias are the non-solid tumors, and that's what I see often for these kind of age group. So here's what happened. So you have to have a real life scenario. So a person starts to feel something's not right in their bodies, whether something they notice, like a lump in the breast, or maybe they are losing weight for no reason, and or they're having problems with bowel activity. They're not going to the restroom as often, or if they do, it's all diarrhea. What is wrong with me? And I feel like I'm losing weight, and I'm losing energy, got diarrhea, I feel crummy, I better see a doctor. So they go to the doctor's office, and the doctor runs some tests, and then gets a little suspicious, and then they run some imaging study, and then they find something. Usually from a CT or MRI, and they do some further testing, and they said, this has to be cancer. So they will call, so you will go home after he explains, you know, it looks like we found something. We're not sure what it is, but we will call you. So they go home, and then the sample that they got from you, if they did a biopsy that day, or if they schedule you for a biopsy, the following week. So you go home, and you're kind of worried. You're saying, you know what? The doctor said there's something that is bad news, but they don't know what it is yet. They'll let me know in a week. This is usually typical real case scenario. So you're thinking about it for a whole week, and you're worried, and you have your church pray for you, and you're thinking, what am I going to do here? This is not good. I'm feeling stressed. And then you come back to the office. The pathology report is out, the biopsy report, or you're going to get a biopsy that day, and then usually it's within about a few days, 3 days or so, and the report comes out, or the doctor calls you up on the phone. Mrs. Jones, I'm sorry to tell you, but it looks like it is positive for cancer. And then you feel, oh, no, this is not good. What am I going to tell my friends and family? And, you know, you're just feeling like it's the end, because it is a very dreadful report to know when you have cancer. And so the next thing the doctor tells you is, I'm going to schedule you for an oncology consult. So it's going to be next Monday. Okay? And the oncologist will tell you what your options are. So you go to the oncologist's office the following Monday, and then you're sitting in the office, and the oncologist comes in. Well, Mrs. Jones, you have this specific cancer. You have hormone positive breast cancer, invasive ductal carcinoma, and it looks like you're a candidate to get chemotherapy. Or they'll say, this cancer here, we can do a lumpectomy. Or we'll do a mastectomy, you know, something like that. They'll discuss that with you. But if they're not sure, they'll say, I'm going to refer you to a breast surgeon who will give you a much bigger picture of what's going to happen. Because I feel, in my opinion, as an oncologist, I feel that we should do chemo first. But I'm not sure, so I'm going to send you to a breast surgeon. So the breast surgeon sees you, and the breast surgeon will say, you know what? This is too big of a cancer. If it's like maybe 6 centimeters or so, 10 centimeters, say, that's too big. If I did the surgery right now, we don't have enough tissue to cover and make a patch, because you don't have enough tissue to stretch to close up that chest. So I think we better shrink the cancer first. So we're going to do chemo first. And then if it's shrunk, then we will do surgery. Okay? Or they'll say, well, we'll do chemo and radiation first, and then do surgery if it shrinks. All right, so you've got, you know, those decisions to make. Which one's better? Do you think putting poisons in the body is going to be healthy? So it's a dreadful. You're thinking, why, that's extreme. Why can't we just do surgery? No, we have to follow our protocols. We have to shrink it first. We're going to do chemo first. Now you might say, okay, I don't agree with that. I want to see if maybe they can really cut it out. Is it possible? So I'm going to call another doctor to give me a second opinion, another breast surgeon. So I can tell you, there are surgeons who will perform surgery even if it's quite big. But you have to find them, and they're not always available. Most of them will follow the protocols. But I can tell you right now that if the breast tumor, let's say, is greater than 1 centimeter, take it out. It's too much of a tumor burden on your system to get well and to try to reverse that. It's the best. A lumpectomy would probably be the best way to go. But again, that's just what I've seen. And I'll tell you why a little later. So now we enter the Gerson therapy. Because now you've seen, okay, this is what the doctor said. My friends told me that they heard about the Gerson therapy. It might help them. Or my parents or my brother, my sister had done some research, because I can tell you one thing. Once you have been diagnosed with cancer, everybody wants to help you. Everybody. The church will pray for you, and somebody in the church and somebody out there, friends, will be looking out for you. Really intentionally, they want to help you. Not just prayer, but they really want to help you. So they'll find something out there, and then they'll suggest to you. You'll get a whole lot of information coming in that is to intend to help you make a decision. So it could be you need to see a natural doctor here who does this thing or another thing here. So you have to research all of them, and you get really stressed out and busy. And so you're going to do your own research at night, too, because you can't sleep. So you end up, just let's say, learning about the Gerson therapy. And so now you want to know, what is this? What is this? And this is interesting because this therapy has been around since the 1920s. And you probably are surprised. Why did I not hear about this? Why? And the whole world knows about it. Here in the U.S., very few. And yet, what's interesting is I get the most calls from the U.S., about 60%. But you had to search it out. Max Gerson, M.D., a medical doctor, a German Jew, born October 18, today would have been his 134th birthday. Today, Max Gerson would be 134. 1881, and he developed a migraine diet because at that time in the 1910s, 1915s, well, he was still in medical school in the 1915s, somewhere there, getting towards medical school. He had a problem with chronic headaches and migraines, and nobody seems to be able to help him. His doctors couldn't help him. His colleagues in medical school, they couldn't do much for him. And so he had to do his own research. And since he was very interested in how plants grew and just nature, he loves nature. So he determined that something, there must be something in nature that can help. And so he developed a diet that is pretty much a very restrictive diet. And the diet is basically just vegetables and some juice, but very strict, no salt. You know, he just eliminated everything that he thought would be not helping him. I mean, after all this, he is a genius, because you will understand later how he came up with this. But he published his findings in medical journals back at his time in Germany. And he established the Gerson therapy as the first cure for skin tuberculosis. So it was really, it was excitement in Germany at the time. And then what led to cancer was one of his skin tuberculosis patients asked him whether he could cure cancer. And he said, oh no. No, I can't do that. This is for tuberculosis diet and migraine. We can't do that. So please, can I try it? Help me anyway. So he said, okay, I'll try it. You know, and what happened then, 1928 was the first time it was discovered that the Gerson therapy can cure or reverse cancer. 1928. It's been around a long time. It is the gold standard in the world. When I get calls, I said, they say, I want to do the Gerson therapy. I know they have done their work. They know exactly what has to be done, because when I question them, I screen them, they already know it takes a lot of juices. It takes, you know, eating in a very strict way for a number of years. So they know it. And so one of his clients, by the way, Dr. Gerson, one of his clients was Albert Schweitzer, known for his medical missionary work, and he won the Nobel Peace Prize. And he was also a German. Again, keep that country in mind, will you? Another German. He was a theologian, an organist, a philosopher, and a physician. And he went to Africa as a medical missionary. And he was one of Dr. Gerson's clients. He had advanced insulin-dependent diabetes, adult onset. And what happened at age 75, when he saw Dr. Gerson, he put him on a program, and he was completely off his insulin medication in a few weeks using the Gerson therapy. So he was basically cured in a few weeks. And so he thought very highly of Dr. Gerson, and that's why he said, I see in Dr. Gerson one of the most eminent geniuses in the history of medicine. Dr. Gerson had a daughter who went on rounds with him, and her name was Charlotte, and many people in the world know who Charlotte Gerson is. She was instrumental in educating the public about the Gerson therapy, so she continued the legacy of her father. She had seen many things in the clinic as she observed her father work. So she established the Gerson Institute in 1977, and then initiated the Gerson Therapy Training Program for licensed professionals in 1996. So since that time, they've been teaching licensed professionals, and generally they are doctors from different countries, and so that have interest in natural therapies for reversing chronic disease. Now let's go back into that special organ I discussed with you earlier in that biochemistry model. Okay. Metabolism is extremely important. This special organelle called the mitochondria is where your energy is derived. How many of you have low energy? Can you raise your hand? Don't be shy. I used to have a little bit low energy. How many of you have tons of energy when you wake up in the morning? Can you raise your hand? No, that's before drinking something, okay? Okay, there are some people who drink something to get them up. But I can tell you right now is that if you have low energy chronically, you have a mitochondrial dysfunction. Many diseases are a mitochondrial dysfunction. Because energy is from there. So if you don't have the energy, what does it mean in the model that I showed you earlier? When you get glucose into the cell, what happens? What does it become? It's converted into what name? Pyruvate, right? Now, pyruvate has to go into the mitochondria to produce that higher amount of ATP, okay? That connection there, you need to make sure you remember that. What does it take to go inside the mitochondria? Well, it takes a lot of energy. Of course, you lose some. But in order for that mitochondria to work, to produce energy, you need some kind of fuel to it. What is it? Oxygen. Please remember that. Okay, so this organ generates the adenosine triphosphate for chemical energy in the most numerous areas of high metabolic activity that we're going to be referring to here is liver. But as you heard earlier, I mentioned the heart is the number one, brain, and then the liver would be our focus. High activity of metabolism, because it's putting proteins together to make something, to make structure. In 1939 experiments, it demonstrated that one oxygen atom forms two ATP. Now, if you don't have oxygen, will you get ATP? No. How can you get energy? So if many of us don't have much energy, and I suspect that we might have a mitochondrial dysfunction, oh, that's serious, because it's not, if you're living in Los Angeles, that's even worse. Where are you going to get this oxygen? How are you going to get it in? Very important to understand the concept. Otto Heinrich Warburg, 1883 to 1970. These are colleagues of Gerson. Another German physiologist and medical doctor. Okay, I want you to remember that country, please. Nobel Prize in Physiology in 1931. He hypothesized that cancer growth depended on what? Glycolysis, the fermentation of glucose. He hypothesized that cancer growth depended on glycolysis, which is the fermentation of sugar. That's what happens when glucose is converted to pyruvate, but it could not be transformed into acetyl-CoA in the mitochondria, so he had to take a shortcut to the left or to the right, whichever you look at it, and to form lactic acid. Okay? Glycolysis is an anaerobic metabolism. Cancer growth depended on an anaerobic metabolism. Healthy cells generate energy from oxidative breakdown. Oxidative means oxygen breakdown of pyruvate, which is the end product of glycolysis. So once you end up in pyruvate, you have two options: to go into the mitochondria, which depended on oxygen, or to form lactic acid. If you don't have oxygen, that's where you go. If you have oxygen, there you go. You go into the cell, and now you're going to get energy, which is what you experience with vibrant health. Vibrant health requires a normal, optimal functioning mitochondria. So many diseases today that are chronic disease is really a mitochondrial dysfunction. And how do you make a mitochondria not work? There's a lot of theories out there, but one thing that's important is the big O. Okay? If you don't have what powers it, it won't work. No energy is produced without oxygen. He said, Otto Heinrich Warburg, he said that the prime cause of cancer is replacement of oxygen in normal body cells by a fermentation of sugar. The prime cause of cancer is replacement of oxygen in normal body cells by a fermentation of sugar. Now, are you getting the picture now? Sugar. Contemporary and later became friends of German physicist, became a friend of German physicist Albert Einstein, another German. And many of them are of Jewish descent. It's very interesting. Do you get a connection now? There's a group of people around that time that they're discovering something, and Dr. Gerson knew these guys. And you put minds together, you come up with something. Now, Warburg, he went and joined the forces, and he was involved in the fighting in World War I. But Einstein, and this was, citation was needed, but someone put this in when I was doing some background check. Einstein was a friend of this physiologist, Warburg, and he said that you need to come back to academia since it would be a tragedy for the world to lose your talents. It was very interesting. Back to this biochemistry model. It's extremely important to understand. If you can help, if you can look at it many times and you understand this, your doctors will be amazed. They will say, boy, you sure know a lot. And you know what's interesting is when you know more and you come to a healthcare provider, they either get intimidated or they will say, let's work together. How's that? Okay? So if you go to a mechanic and you got a car that's not working, something happened, and you knew about it, and you go to the mechanic and say, you know, I need my air filter changed, I need my oil changed, I need the fuel pump replaced, and they'll say, okay. But if you come to him and say, you know, something's wrong with my car, we'll do a diagnostic check, and then he'll give you everything. Right? It takes a lot. If you know a lot, you can get to the point quite quickly. So knowledge is important. So back to this biochemistry model, you remember that it's very important to know this concept because we will be repeating it over and over again. And so I'm going to point out to you one more time. It started out with sugar. Okay? Now we are coming to understand that cancer needs sugar. It needs it because it needs the sugar for energy. Okay? But it takes it from a different route. So it comes from glucose, it forms to pyruvate, which is the breakdown of glucose. And before entering the mitochondria, which is the one that's outlined in blue here, that's the mitochondria cell, before it enters, energy is expanded. So you will lose one ATP, and then you go into the mitochondria, entering the Krebs cycle, which is known as the oxidative phosphorylation and an electron transport system. Okay? You learned it in chemistry. To produce ATP, which is the most amount of ATP in the mitochondria. But here's what happens. In order for this mitochondria to work, you need something. What was that? Exactly. How in the world can you make ATP if you don't have oxygen? Extremely important. And most people who have cancer, are they energetic? No. They're usually tired, right? And not only are they tired, they feel they've lost a lot of weight. Why losing weight? What's that relationship to this biochemical model? Well, you know, if you can't produce energy because the glucose is not getting into the mitochondria, because it's getting shunted into the lactic acid path, what happens is your body will convert protein into glucose. It has to, because it doesn't know what to do. It's only the natural way to do. So it has to basically break down your muscle to get some kind of energy, which is really not a good thing. You're losing your resource just to live. So you start to lose a lot of muscle, which is known in cancer circles as cachexia. I want you to remember that term. Cachexia means wasting, muscle wasting. People who are in starvation go through cachexia after extended starvation. All right. So now that you understand, oxygen is going to be important, okay? So the Gerson therapy runs on four legs. Okay? The greater than 95%, the first leg, greater than 90%, 5% of that food, which is very important, is going to be vegan diet. That's why here at the church, there's lifestyle medicine being taught, lifestyle health, food preparation, how to become a vegan. And this is the place to come because this is church, like I said, it's very health-oriented, very much pro-health, and a lot of things can be learned. There's cooking classes. There's all kinds of programs that people in the public, if they knew about it, I mean, they could come here, and it's either free or cheap. It's really cheap to join. So this is, you need to have the fundamentals. A vegan diet is actually the way to go if you want to stop or reverse cancer. That's the first step. You got to be a vegan as much as possible. Now, in the Gerson therapy, like I said, it's a therapy. It's not a lifestyle, but you're committed to at least 2 years. You will learn how fast things can turn around or how slow. I'll explain that. So one of the four legs of Gerson therapy is it's going to be 95% or more vegan, meaning plant-based, quite strict, okay, on a day-to-day basis for the next average 2 years. And if you are a qualified candidate, you will be drinking 13 glasses of fresh vegetable juices each day. 13 juices, which means if you were drinking 13, you really couldn't afford to drink any water. So if you drink water, then you are at risk of not finishing your 13th glass of juice. So you must restrict water. You must, if you're going to drink 13 juices. every single day for the next 2 years. Okay? And to process that amount of juice fresh, you need a juicer that does not break down. Can you imagine if there is a breakdown in nutrient uptake and here you are waiting for a part to get it fixed? You're in panic mode. Because it's a therapy. It's like this. If a doctor prescribed you with something and you ran out and the pharmacy doesn't have it, you're going to go on weeks waiting for a shipment. You're in panic mode. I've got cancer and I'm not doing anything? The third leg is nutritional metabolic and enzyme supplements. Why do you need this? Well, you know, in physical therapy, I see a lot of orthopedic cases, and some of them are like knee replacement case or sports injury, you know, ankle sprain or knee sprain. And when they come and I work on them, make them feel a little bit better, do I tell them, okay, why don't you go ahead and you can start running now? And they just injured their leg a few days ago. That's not good. In fact, if they're limping, they shouldn't be running. I might even prescribe them with a cane, at least to help so that they don't limp so hard, or put a brace on their ankle so they don't re-injure, right? So if you are weak with disease, like cancer, advanced cancer, you need some help because that poor digestive tract, which is completely in a mess, it's not digesting the food. You're losing weight for no reason. You think eating a lot of food will help that? Something's wrong. Hey, doc, I'm eating as much as I can, but I am 20 pounds under. The enzymes have been shut down. And the pancreas is responsible for that. The pancreas is not only to produce enzyme, but it is an immune organ. It also breaks down cancer. So if the cancer is an intelligent system, do you think it wants the pancreas to be around? No. You've got to sabotage it somehow. So the pancreas is down. And you know how you sabotage the pancreas? How many of you know how? What do you eat? A lot of sugar in your life, a lot of bad foods in your life that overtax the pancreas, and eventually it will just give out. And you end up with pancreatitis, or you can end up with all kinds of digestive disorders, and then, of course, cancer sets in because your energy is down. So it's a lot of systems are down. So you need help. And so the supplements are there as a crutch, as a support, so you can, if you're limping, you walk normal with a crutch. If you have digestive problems, your food doesn't get assimilated, you're not gaining weight, well, the enzymes that you take in will break it down for you. And now you can take the food in and, oh, I feel better. So the enzymes are important. Live enzymes and nutritional supplements like things that are important for energy, like vitamin B12. Oh, you got to have that because, you know, you're on a vegan diet, you know? So you need some kind of B vitamins. Your blood cells need it. And you don't forget that most cancer are anemia. Oh, most of them. In fact, for me, I've seen just about 90%, 99% maybe, are anemic. Again, a very intelligent system in the cancer environment. It needs several factors. It needs a low oxygen environment to thrive. It needs a lot of sugar. Because energy is derived from ATP. If there's only 2 ATP to be made in glycolysis pathway, and the cancer can't use the mitochondria because it requires oxygen and it doesn't want that, do you think it wants you to eat sugar to thrive? So when you're eating some kind of high carbohydrate, special refined carbohydrate diet, who do you think will get it first? A healthy cell or a cancer cell? That's exactly it. The cancer cell will get it first. Based on the ratio of what you see in terms of the getting 2 ATP versus 38, cancer has an approximately 18 times more affinity to sugar than normal cells. And that's why the PET scan is the tool to find them, because they will inject sugar into your bloodstream during fasting. And when the sugar gets into the bloodstream, it will go straight to the cancer, because the cancer is the one to ask for it first, before your cells. It's very greedy. And so when it goes to the cancer, since it has detected by gamma radiation, so you will light up in the board, as it were. The circuits are all lit up, and it tells you exactly where the cancers are in your body. And when you see the report, if you ask for the report, "Doc, I'm going to see the report myself," it will say, "Increase FDG uptake." When you see that, compared to all the normal cells around that doesn't have an increased FDG uptake, that's very likely to be the cancer. Because only cancer cells have a very high affinity for sugar. Liver detoxification. If you have a breakdown of cancer, the only way to break down cancer, get it out of the body. How do you get cancer out of the body? There's probably four major ways to remove poisons out of your body. Can you name them? What's the main place to remove poisons from the body? Where? What route? The colon. Okay, that's the main garbage disposal system. Second, kidneys, bladder. Okay, there's the second route. Third, skin, the largest organ in the body. You have to sweat it out. Fourth, lungs. You have to breathe it out. Okay? But that's not much out there coming out. Carbon dioxide is one, but really, you might have congestion and start coughing things out. But it really, it's not a very good place to get cancer out. This is a solid mass. So the main route is the colon. You have to understand, like a plumber, how do you get this stuff out? First, you've got to break down the mass. Okay? And your enzyme systems will help that. But you need help from the enzymes, because the enzymes will be breaking down and tearing up the covering of the cancer mass. It's protected, coating with fibrin. Once it breaks it down, it exposes the cancer. Now it's exposed to the immune system. If you don't have an immune system, we better help it by giving you some immune support. It will go to the cancer and start to work on it. Okay, so you've got a cancer breaking down. It takes time, slowly. Now, as the cancer breaks down, where will the products go to? From the cell. It has to release it somewhere into the bloodstream. Well, the lymphatics, and it end up in the bloodstream. Okay? So when it's in the bloodstream now, you got all this junk that you're trying to get it out. It will end up in the organ that is very important at getting it loose. What would that be? The liver. So cell, cancer, lymphatics, and bloodstream, and then to the liver. And the liver will... The blood goes to the liver. The entire supply of the blood goes to the liver every 3 minutes. So you can imagine the liver is filtering all those poisons. And then from the liver, it will go to the bile duct, which is toxic. Bile is toxic. It's coming out through the bile duct, and the bile duct is right below the stomach area. It's in the first part of the duodenum. So it comes out there. That is 28 feet before the opening at the end. 28 feet long. How long does it take to travel from there to the end? What's the transit time? I can tell you. If you're a meat eater, the transit time is about 36 to 72 hours before it reaches the end. If you're a vegan, a strict vegan, 11 to 24 hours. The sooner you can get it out of that, the better, because of what they call auto-intoxication. You see, when it comes out of the small, when it's going into the small intestine, that first 10 inches or so is where all your nutrients from food get absorbed. So do you think those things that are coming out will get reabsorbed? Oh yeah, there's a high probability it will get reabsorbed. And so now you enter a vicious cycle of poison out, poison in, poison out, poison in. And as that's building up, the cells at the top end, at the upper or upstream, continue to dump poisons to the blood. So you end up with a cycle that is devastating to the body. And we call that toxic reaction. And so what happens then, a few weeks into the vegan diet, you feel really sick and low energy, worse. What is happening? I thought I'm supposed to be healthy. I'm feeling worse. And then your doctor will tell you, you need chemo. And then you're saying, I guess you're right. I need chemo. But you don't know what to do. It's going in a vicious cycle. You need to help that liver open up the gates. And that's where the liver detoxification comes in. If you don't detoxify your liver, remember it, all these organs are crippled due to lack of oxygen. There's no energy. It is shut down. The entire trillion cells, 70 trillion, 70 to 100 trillion cells in your body, that energy cells inside each of that cell is shut down. And they can't help. But God, in his infinite wisdom, has given us knowledge. The word says that my people died for lack of knowledge. Wow. So if we can harness the oxygen and put it back where it belongs, when the mitochondria lights up, the cancer is saying, I hate this. This is not my game. You know, I like to think about the football players. You know, when I first came to the U.S., I didn't know that there were two teams in the same team. One is the defense and the other offense. And who determines who is in the field depends on who's got the ball, right? So if you are always on the offense, that's good. Because, you know, you got the ball. Cancer is the same thing. In analogy, who has the ball? Who has control of the oxygen? You or does the cancer? If the cancer knows that oxygen is not what it wants, it's going to keep you anemic. It probably, and I don't care which comes first, the chicken or the egg, it probably sabotages the bone marrow. Remember, all cells have mitochondria, except the red blood cells. It carries the hemoglobin, the oxygen transport, to the cells that need oxygen. So your hemoglobin, the red cells, is made in the bone marrow, and the bone marrow is shut down. So no matter what you do, you don't have the ability to carry the oxygen, and who's got the ball? Who's got the ball? The cancer. You see, it's a very complex. You've got to turn on the energy, plug in the power. Who's got the power? What do? You pray, because God is your power. He will give you understanding, but you need to know his creative work. How does the body work? And God has given us this knowledge through other people who may not even in the same faith. Dr. Gerson wasn't a Seventh-day Adventist. I don't even know if he's a Christian. I know he came from a Jewish home, But you know, God uses people in all kinds of ways. It doesn't matter to him. He is no respecter of person. He does love us enough to help us. But we have to grasp that significance and apply it. So fresh vegetable juices. What time do I have to take a break? I don't remember. I don't have a schedule. Let's try in another 10 minutes, okay? Fresh vegetable juices. You need to have a juicer that will extract juice with the highest amount of enzymes, because the enzymes are your key to breaking the cancer down. The wall of the cancer is covered by a protective coat known as fibrin. And so you need fresh vegetable juices that are rich in enzymes, vitamins, minerals, and potassium, which is very important, very high in nutrient density. It leads to a rapid cell uptake. So it's the fastest way to almost bypass the digestive tract, because remember, your system is down. You're not absorbing. You need something. And so to minimize the work of digestion, the juice now is very important. Dr. Gerson knew that, and it takes less energy to take up juice than the food that you eat. That's energy draining. And you're already weak. So the juice is very important. It will be somewhere between 10 to 13 cups a day. The second is the plant-based diet, which we already know in the Adventist Church, that's an important health message, is the plant-based diet. Okay? That means not just any plant. You need to have healthy plants, organic, fresh vegetables. Do not take something that is not organic, because you're putting poisons back in. We all know how high the toxins are, the chemicals they use in the food industry. So it needs to be fresh, organic, or locally grown vegetables. And it needs to be cooked in low heat. You don't want to kill the enzymes. The enzymes are heat sensitive. You don't want to kill all of it. I mean, some enzymes can survive heat around 160 degrees, 170, but most of them are dead after that. So you need those enzymes. But again, don't worry, because at least you did not lose all the nutrients besides the enzymes. You still have the supplements to help you. You also need to cook it slow as possible within its own juice. That's why waterless cooking is a must. So when you cook foods, you just put 2 tablespoons of water at the bottom of the pan, and you layer up the vegetables. And when you're cooking it, slowly, so that it doesn't burn the food. Now, over time, the food will be cooked in its own juice, so that when you eat it, it tastes good, even without salt. So it is a saltless diet. And the reason is extremely important. Back to the biochemistry model. There's science in this. Back in the biochemistry model, salt, and people in cardiology know this, causes water retention. Okay? So if you have cancer, there is salt in there, lots of it, lots of salt. So if you restrict salt and you are drinking juices, which is rich in potassium, sodium and potassium compete with each other. They compete inside a cell. Our cells, a healthy cell, the major currency of the cell is potassium. We are meant to eat, to take in tons of potassium from green vegetables. But when you don't have any vegetables in the diet, if it's a meat-based diet, you are losing that edge, and the salt will eventually take over, and you will end up with cellular edema. So in order to remove cancer, you have to move the water out of that salt, of that cell. And so in order to do that, you take in a rich potassium diet, not bananas, because remember now, sugar. Okay? Rich potassium diet, green vegetables and the juices that are selected. And then that will compete with the sites in the cell with the sodium. And since you restricted sodium, that salt in the cell has to leave because the blood needs a certain amount of salt because you will have your body eliminates a certain amount of sodium all the time. So therefore, the body has to get it from somewhere, and it's going to take it out of the cells. And so there's going to be a movement of salt out of the cell, especially if you're on a rich potassium diet, and water follows it out. And so in the first month or two on the Gerson therapy, you will lose a lot of weight, water weight. And that's a good sign because it means that the toxins are leaving you because toxins are dissolved in that fluid. So it takes fluid to transport the cancer out. So if you don't drink water, if you don't drink the juices, it's going to stay in and it will not get out. So there's no meat because meat is high in salt. Not only that, it doesn't have any fiber. So when it gets into the, when you're eating and it gets into your intestine, it just stays there for 36 hours to 72 hours, just waiting for fiber to stimulate the intestinal peristalsis and to move that out. So that's why vegetarians, especially vegans, will live longer. And their risk for cancer is very low. Because it has fiber to transport the toxins out. So the longer you retain food in your intestine, the risk of developing chronic disease is very high because of that retention where it becomes very toxic as the bacteria start to break it down. It's introducing a lot of toxins from the waste products of the bacteria during fermentation, during breakdown of fats and protein, and it will produce its own types of nitrates and all this end products that will just reabsorb into the bloodstream, and now it will intoxicate you. So while it's not necessarily, or it could not be necessarily directly related to cancer, it does not help someone who is in cancer to be a meat eater. It doesn't help. It's a drawback. You might as well just focus on the vegetable because that is the one that will get you through. Okay, the nutritional supplements that's needed. You need a high potassium diet, and there's some supplements you can get which are potassium compound solution, which is made specifically in its formula by Dr. Gerson, who determined after studies that it will take in potassium into the cell much faster than just plain potassium. So if you had potassium gluconate, that will not absorb as quick as something that has a threefold type of potassium. It has potassium monophosphate, potassium gluconate, and I can't remember the top of my head what the next one is, but there's three potassium concoction that can absorb into the cells very quickly when you have the compound solution, which is important to push the sodium out. It's a water, salt and water movement that we're talking about, that we're going to get out of the cells through these supplements and through the high intake of vegetable juices. To get into this, I think we better take a break. So let's give us about 12 minutes, 7 minutes? Okay, 7 minutes. Okay? And then we'll continue. This is, try to retain this because I'm not going to get back to that. There's a lot of material to present.